Blog Talk Radio.
Found Masonic Effects on this day in the middle of February. I hope you're well. I hope everybody's well. Good day. It's that time in when Canada has lost a great storyteller, Stuart MacLean. Those of you who were a follower of Stuart's work on CBC, we'll share this loss, and those of you who haven't had the opportunity, he was a wonderful, magical storyteller who made a lot of us feel connected. That and one of the remarkable things that he was able to do was to continuously teach us to laugh at ourselves, to laugh at the unexpected things that can happen. Keep it in perspective. He was a really interesting man and made a difference. And he will be missed, well thought of, and missed. So good day. I hope you're all well. This is we have a very interesting commentary today. A community adjusts the path of a Mason. I can't tell you how exciting it is to be here with you, because you know there's some interesting things going on in masonry, and I need your advice here to put this into some perspective, brethren, whoever's out there, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I've been rethinking the whole matter of our proximity to women in this jurisdiction, whether women, the question essentially is, what about women? The perspective on that changes, I think, as the background changes. Background change right now is with the millennials, a younger vocal group of people, people vocalizing their concerns and problems in a way that my generation didn't. The autocrats amongst us and the authoritarian personalities would feel that there's a certain loss of control. The Republicans amongst us, Republicans in the sense perhaps of Rome or France, will think that there's an accountability always to the people. And I happen to be of that notion. It goes back to the start of the democracy, the chaos of the vote. The citizens came forward at the calling and made their decisions, just as they made decisions about an elected who were going to be the generals to lead the armies. I don't know if I could say it was simpler times. I don't think the past was. I think it's just our sentiment, the sentimentalism that leads us to say things like that. If we're not living in the moment, then we'll often slide into the past. And it happens when we get a bit, when people become a little bit feeble-minded, or they just aren't or don't have enough vigor for the pace of their day, and all of that. If you think about it, is a barrier that's created within the mind of the individual. But my goodness, do we struggle hard to overcome that and that notion and find and the popular complaint over the past 75 years or 100 years or so has been that time is moving too fast and there's too much pressure, a lot of whining going on. But the overwhelming ethos, the overwhelming feeling is that there's a growing energy, a growing tension. And we'll need to get used to those tensions. The tension, unless you're of the generation that feels that kind of tension in the air, it is bad or it's unpredictable. It's pretty much predictable. We know where it's going. If our passions and our concerns don't have a voice, we know that they become underground, and then they become where they, and in the darkness, some very naughty things happen. So let's keep the conversation going. Today I'm going to kick it off a bit with have a nice musical break here. Some great selections: Wes Montgomery, Chick Corea, Bud Powell. Wherever you are on the planet, tuning into Masonic Effects today. Thank you. A little nod again to our friends and brethren in Norway, the supporters of Masonic Effects. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope if you've ever wondered why jazz is the music, so it tends to be the musical genre of the program, it's because it's a universal language. It's a world. It's the music of the world. Everybody. See, here's a bit of Wes Montgomery, Bumpin' on Sunset. Thank you. Not bad for a guy that taught himself to play, huh? Just amazing. Just amazing. Beautiful music. Beautiful music. I'm not here to find fault with Mason Reed. Is it all right to ask a few questions? I hope so. I hope. My goodness. And I always like to think that since I haven't had an original thought for far too long, and it's always seems smart for somebody like me to rely on the rephrasing of somebody more famous. You've done it before. The important thing, says Einstein, is not to stop questioning. Curiosity has its own reason for existing. I tend to believe that very wholeheartedly. But I think that people that follow Masonic effects are a bit, in a way, we have something in common, apart from our appreciation and our exploration of masonry, is the effects of that utopian hope. I'm one of those people, and I think that many of us, I expect politicians, I'm always surprised when they lie. You can imagine, I have a lot of friends that laugh about that. I have some detractors that would be kind of mawkish about that. I expect our governments to function that way. The people have that responsibility, and I believe that there's an accountability within each person to our fellow man. We have a responsibility. I understand that there's not that character is not always at a high level. Character is what you do and the decisions you make, your ethics, when nobody's watching. What do you do? Do you do the right thing? Or is it only when you do the right thing when somebody's noticing? So the authoritarians are right. We need it. I don't subscribe to the fact that I need somebody watching me to make sure I do the right thing. I don't need a rule book or a book of law to tell me what the right thing to do. Some people would argue. A lot of people, the paramilitary types, would certainly be confused by hearing something like that. I think good people know how to live, know how to treat one another. Masonry is a testament to that kind of thinking. The last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the enormous pressure that the middle class has been under, as it affects the growth in numbers, the actual membership of Masonry. Masonry does face some challenges, but I think it's our own doing. It's not enough to say that this is about fault. I mean, that's ridiculous. It's childish to think of those kind of terms. This is about accountability. It would take a real fool to believe something so deeply in spite of the evidence, yeah? Because he understood the truth of what his beliefs were. Only a fool would do that. Only a fool, I think, would hold out hopes for that community of mankind, universal well-being. To think more and to be concerned about the stranger, the Samaritan. The story of the Samaritan is about, in the Christian work, is about a pariah, a person that was not wanted, that unwashed caste, that outsider, that person that was wrong born. And it's a story of a community of bullies, with an undercurrent of prejudice. And here's the person that had been bullied, and victimized, who by happenstance comes upon a person in a really bad way and not only offers but takes the person aside and puts himself out to assist that person with no expectation of exchange. And so deeply was the bully affected. It changed, and the story is continues on, a little bit of a spin to it, as the Good Samaritan. The Good Samaritan, the unusual Samaritan. When that person lying there is of that group that's been bullying and subjecting him and his kind to enormous risk and to ridicule and conflict, why in good conscience would he bother to offer aid? The moral is, of course, that was a person of character. That was truly a person of character. So now we are no more at odds with the popular media than we ever were. Every one of us has to make up our own mind about the truth. And that way we have to fact find. For a long time we've been slumbering, I think. Lazy, perhaps. Trusting, I'd like to think. That what we're told is in fact the truth. And far from it, it's somebody's opinion with a spin. It's an opinion that fits their agenda. Unless we know what that agenda is, it's a bit premature to assume. So the people that are vilified around us are probably not quite the villains that they're made out to be. Probably not. And we're probably capable of making our own decisions without being told. Probably. But the form of leadership that we're talking about is insight. Insight here. So the utopians would believe that the principles of masonry are achievable. Well, let me ask just a few questions about that of you, if you don't mind. Why then have we tampered with something that is so close to a utopian dream? The aspects of masonry that were honorable, still are honorable, are strength of the organization. One of the strengths of the organization is that element of philanthropy, that caring and doing for others. For no other reason than it's the right thing to do. Not only laudable, but it has given root to a whole network of service organizations. And here around here, it's the Lions and the Rotary. Particularly, it took root here in this part of the world. In other places, not so much, but here. That idea of building and contributing, doing fundraisers. Volunteerism certainly is part of the atmosphere of the early community. Here in Canada, we're a nation of early community, and we still have that. We see the mums and dads doing fundraisers for their children all over the place. And we see our popular restaurants and coffee shops doing fundraisers to assist, to really, really cool ideas, to assist little kids. Now we're seeing them organized for our seniors. It's and for the downtrodden. Now we're seeing a movement, a voice, not only nationally but internationally. That's growing louder and louder to deal with the polarity of wealth. So that notion, however we may be ashamed to admit that we've got ours and nothing else matters, we're going to take care of our own, The shame of it is that's something that Masonry has tried to change. Now, how you do that, you have to use your best judgment. You really do. If you're of the type of character that can make the large sacrifices, if you're of to live an esoteric life or to live a monastic life, that sets you apart from many of us, and you'll make those sacrifices willingly. There are so many different ways for people to get by in their life to prepare for their retirement when they're not able to be as productive as they once were. You have to set aside a little nest egg, always setting off into the future, always building it, but preserving. And part of that comes from the nature of the people that come to this country and have populated it for hundreds of years. People that come from strife tend to have that thinking that we have to enjoy and we should enjoy the freedoms and peace around us today. But if you felt hunger, you'll never have an empty cupboard. And perhaps you'll have an extra can of something there just in case of an emergency. And thank goodness that all those people from all over the world who are now our grandparents and great grandparents are able to live in safety and have somebody caring for them in this country. And they pass on these lessons to us, these values, universally. Whether we're the Scottish boy or the Italian boy or the Greek boy, or the Russian or Ukrainian boy, you take care of your community, you take care of your elders. Whether it's a culturally defined, it's all good, every bit of it. The task, I think, of Masonry has become rather abstract because we can't lay claim to the high ground here charitable fundraising and things like that. It's still one of the spokes, one of the elements, one of the profiles of Masonry, and probably always will be at the root. We want to make a difference and make an effort. But when you look out at the communities around us, there are a lot of organizations doing a lot of similar kind of work. So we don't have the market on that anymore. A place for the gentry to rub shoulders with the intelligentsia. Well, there's other places. There's different clubs and organizations where people congregate to have lofty discussion. And we've also inherited things like the Royal Society. We have a branch here nearby in Toronto. Every developed nation has its think tank. Where do the bright people go to bounce ideas off one another? Well, you need that. Unless your people are clamoring and have felt insulted by somebody else's intelligence, or there's been the unrestricted display of hubris, then we can always expect a retaliation. But here, we can't take the high ground there. There's an elitism, and people have people, new money particularly, not old money. Old money doesn't need to flash it around. New money needs that conspicuous display. Bigger house, the proper address, the car with the right types of initials. It's all pretty meaningless in the big scope of things. Old money, on the other hand, there's a modesty that comes with old money. There's a confidence that comes with old money. You don't have to display it. You appreciate it for what it is, but it doesn't have to be sort of pushed into the face of people around. Hubris. Or Marx might call them the petit bourgeoisie. You know, those conspicuous displays. I've got this, you don't. Yeah, well, where does it get, how does it get, how does that work? How's that working for you? People with the attitude generally tend to be humbled by the truths that come with their own sense of mortality. Greed seems to not be something that people are proud of. The feelings of guilt, they come unabated. No question about that. The excuses and rationalizations and defensiveness, I can promise you, they stop. And what's underneath it is the lamentations, the regrets. If you've ever been with old men in the last years of their life, if you've ever had the privilege of sitting down and talking to them and learning what's on their minds and how they're trying to summarize and understand what mark they've made and what role that they've had, you begin to see this unadulterated sense of conscience. It is remarkable, and it doesn't really change whether you're talking about wealthy people or people that have worked for somebody else all their life, or independent, the industrialists, the bankers, the rich and the famous. There are equalizers, and I think some of our catechism explains that. There are some things that are equalizers in the course of life. Those conversations are compelling. One would be wise to pay careful attention to help reveal what's coming ahead for all of us. So that little note that somebody is watching, well, the somebody that's watching is you. It's your conscience. Oh, of course, you can try and organically damage yourself, drink yourself into a stupor, but you always come back to the same reality. Always do. Always do. Masonry helps us adjust to the things in real terms so that we can move forward with confidence, to accept the inevitable, and to change. And do we think we're moving forward with a hopeful expression or a resigned expression? Well, the utopia, the effect of utopia that we have allowed to penetrate the walls of our lodges, that unqualified aspiration that we can and do make a difference, has left us with one of the most daunting challenges. And we've talked here about things that are some of the challenges facing Masonry in a literal sense. The conduct within the lodge matched expectations and those types of things. The cultures around Masonry change. And yes, that does affect our thinking about the purposefulness, the relevance of Masonry. The risk isn't whether our cultures consider Masonry relevant or not. It's whether we let that kind of thinking interfere with our own expectations. Now, too many of our entered apprentices are walking away confused. And I think I always feel a bit responsible for that. The confusion, I believe, is because one of the most difficult things is to face what we need, what nurtures Masonry, and how rare that commodity is. We can't sit down in a room, although it's been tried, sit down and put earnest people in a room, sit them down, talk to them about, in dramatic terms, about the need for change or the need for new, fresh ideas. We can't do that on command. All right, I want you to all sit here. We'll all look at each other. And I want you to become inspired and creative. Ready? Go. I don't hear the phone ringing. I don't hear any ideas coming out of it. Doesn't quite work that way. Never did, never does, never will. So the idea, though, is remarkably important. Masonry has always been, I would argue, predicated on the notion of imagination. Imagination. We see the imagination in the arts, and you and I are admonished to study the arts and sciences. Where is imagination more at play? You want to think. Think. Arts and sciences. What's the commonality? They both require imagination. Whether it was Hawking or Einstein or Newton, the philosophers, the applied scientists, Michelangelo, Da Vinci, Botticelli, Mozart, which one of them didn't feed on imagination? The unknown. Oh, where we need a bit of a kick in the pants is that we're collectively shivering about the great unknown. And it's not that it's because we're a bunch of schoolboys sitting in a dark field. No. This is much more serious, gentlemen and lady. An imagination bodies forth the form of things unknown. The poet's pen turns them to shapes and gives to airy nothing a local habitation and a name. Imagination, there's no form to it. There's no history to it. I can talk about this in a sense, but there's no history, no thread that has substance that we can hold up and study and examine. The arts. Without imagination, what would it be? The scientists. Take away imagination and what have you. Oh, you would say the Euclidean and Euclidean geometry. What good without imagination? That the stars would hang in the sky and the universe would continue to expand. No imagination would make us ever go and search that out, would it? We'd still be living in the place of our birth with no curiosity about what's over the horizon. Why something falls, why something burns, why something tastes a certain way, why some people get sick and die. It's all curiosity. We build tools that feeds our curiosity, and it takes curiosity to build those darn tools. And then the audacity to think that at some point that should just all stop. Because I'm getting a little older, that needs to stop. I'm uncomfortable. No. This is too serious for that kind of ridiculous childishness. I'll call it childishness. No, this is a little more serious. This is the importance of imagination. Why are some cultures climbing over themselves to learn about what goes on in North America? How is imagination fostered? Why do these ideas just flame up here in North America? Well, that's a bit of a misnomer. fact finders out there amongst us, we know that there's been a clamor to claim to be the source of great things. And it wasn't true. It was spin. So there's no nation on the face of the earth that doesn't have great inventors. And do we know about them? Well, right now we're forgetting. We're convenient with that forgetfulness. We want to forget that the great knowledge comes from the East. Numbers, mathematics, geometry, astronomy, astrology, alchemy. But the task that we have is to understand the effect of imagination on the creation and the development and the longevity of the masonry. Yeah, we could use, periodically, we could use a Beethoven or a Picasso or a Sargent or... or a Jackson Pollock. Periodically. But just because we appreciate them doesn't mean they're just going to pop up. We have them. We don't need somebody faking it. You can't really fake it. We have to go out and discover the rascals all the time. Where are they? Where's the next one? Well, they're out there somewhere. They're distracted in the classroom because... education is important because somebody famous said so. Really? The vocabulary, being taught how to think and think critically and analytically, it's not important. Well, maybe you're one of the few on the face of the earth who has those skills come to their attention naturally. But we've discovered a long time ago that some of those skills can be taught. And some of the skills once taught to people with imagination creates another commoner language for imaginative people. Imagine the 100,000 scientists that worked on getting the first man on the moon. Imagine the language. What was the common link? Well, these people were articulate. Not that they were just bright. We can be brilliant without being articulate. Maybe that's what the arts and sciences is truly all about. It's an articulation of intelligence. And you sit back and people do with what they will. A monkey with a keyboard does not pound out Shakespeare. I remember hearing that many years ago. Monkeys don't seem to have imagination. At least we can't quite measure it yet. So the utopian dream, is this a utopian dream that you and I share? What proof can you bring for me that it's not, that the essence of masonry isn't imagination? I think it is. And we respect and we revere. There is a reverence in masonry about our history. Hindsight teaches us the greatness amongst us. Hindsight teaches us to conduct ourselves as if amongst us there will be somebody that may not be the titular leader. It's not just kings and emperors and presidents that come up with brilliant ideas. We know that. It's not bureaucrats that produce. We know that. The great symphonies of the world. Go and find out which composer was a physician. It'll surprise you. A couple of them were. I guess they had a day job to pay the bills, didn't they? So we've created this enormously enormously pressured environment for ourselves. And we're quite comfortable in it. And we're watchful. And sometimes, yes, it's we become impatient. Where's the next one? Is it, why isn't it here? Why isn't that startling, inspiring epoch here? Where's the doppelganger for the great Elias Ashmole? Oh. Here, we move forward. When you come back, we'll get into the commentary for today. This, though, is from North Sea Jazz Concert in 2003. Oh! You know how old I am? 2000. Anyway, I weep. Chicoria, the Electric Band. Gee. I didn't say I was old, did I? It's all you got. You look like me. I think you're old. I worry about you. Check it out. Yeah, we have to move on, gentlemen. Oh, it gets better. Believe me, it's worth it. Go find it. Go get it. This is some Chicoria. Amazing. Amazing tunes. here to top up your beverage, your glass of Kool-Aid. Well, you're a Mason, so obviously you've drank the Kool-Aid. You bought into this. Yeah. You bought into this whole process. Here's a little something for us to think about. Geometry is at the core of masonry. Just when you think I know what I'm talking about, and I'm telling you that imagination is at the core of masonry, well, it's got some interesting tools lying at its feet. Geometry. So one would have to be crazy to dismiss the architecture of our community. Absolutely. Do we define community as personal as a man who looks only at his footsteps as he returns each day from his labors? Is that community? Do common values set the boundaries of community in which we begin to understand that people aspire to the same thing? Are we faith-based? Do we believe as I believe, or if not, there will be animosity? Only believe what I believe. Of course not. There are a few exceptions on earth, places time has forgotten. This is not to say sentimentalism is not a powerful force. Ultimately, our views matter a little. Reality is what it is. We live, we strive to get by the best way we can, we die. The advantages of the minority are not the opportunity for all. The rich man's gains are not necessarily mine. And is opportunity open to everybody? Well, no. Malcolm Gladwell at least outlined that for us in very accessible terms. But there are a set of principles which have been, by which good men have been guided, that weak-minded men have used to justify the insanity of war. How will masonry react? There will be concern over volumes such that we will downsize. Yeah, we're doing that now. A lot of fretting about that. And yeah, for some, it's simply the currency. We can do more when we have greater numbers of people involved contributing financially. So either we put more pressure, more financial expectation on a fewer number of people, or we revisit the business plans and make them more modest during this time of our existence. Or we see the foundation crack under the growing weight. Masonry seems to be so much more of a democratic structure. Masons give their support or not, but grand lodges are in service to the membership. Most receive overwhelming support, blind or well-informed notwithstanding. When you look at our grand lodges, they deserve that. Community adjustment is necessary. It's all part of the path of a Mason and masonry. Geometry at the core. Great tools, brilliant tools. Fractal geometry, where did that come from? After all those centuries of just Euclidean, where the hell did this fractal, where did that come from? Who knew? Who knew there was another geometry out there? Well, I want to know. I want to know, where is, am I sitting next to the grandfather or the father or the next Robert Browning in Lodge? Am I? There's a poet. There's a poetry inside each of you. You may be clumsy about it, but the first time you jumped on a bike, you didn't know how to ride it. The first time dad and mom threw you the keys to the car, you didn't know how to drive. You need lessons. In the early part of his life, creative life, Robert Browning was relatively obscure. But he has become regarded as one of the most important poets of the Victorian period. His dramatic monologues and the psycho-historic epic The Ring and The Book, a novel in verse, have established him as a major figure in the history of English poetry. Maybe I'm sitting next to Robert right now. Can you imagine? The potential is always there. If we become cynical about the so-called erosion, we lose track. We lose track. We maybe have been in the studio with our tools creating a statuary from beautiful marble. Now we may have to travel a little further and look a little harder to find good marble. And we may need now to search a little further and go into different places to find apprentices with the appetite. After a while, generation to generation, we see that our young people take for granted educational opportunities, education. The early schools, when there wasn't school, meant that there was a keenness about it. People that are new to our shores see that opportunity. So we have this mixture of people who have been born with these opportunities and people that have not. In my family, I was born to masonry, but it didn't at all help. I still had to go through initiation and the experience, thank goodness, for myself. And what did you and all the other people that participated in my ritual of initiation unlock? And that very night and that very moment, it was the imagination. What was I to expect? Probably the greatest, absolute greatest gift of all. Can you imagine anything being more significant in a person's life than and a group doing that? Where else would that have happened? I don't see anybody. I don't see any service club doing that, gentlemen. I don't see any organization. I don't see any autocrat or a politician. Nobody else is doing that. And you give that privilege, you give that treasure, that secret to so many men with the hope that it's not wasted on them. Here, come to the door, we'll admit you, present yourself as a serious-minded fellow. Here's the trainings. The goal is to unlock the mysteries. And then what you do with it, the imagination that you apply to it, is in your heart and in your soul. And if you're a good student of the craft, the end result is the development, a better understanding of yourself and your character. And by doing that, we purposefully make an effort to improve the environment around us, the lives of people that don't know us. Doesn't matter. One of the greatest and odd things about masonry, the clamor and the fame doesn't matter. Oh, it matters in the mind. There's some simple-minded leadership in masonry, I'm sure. There must be. I don't think I've met many of them or any of them, but I'm sure there is. But whether it's metaphor or allegory, whatever turns your crank, masonry is willingly and deliberately and in our face unlocking an encouraging imagination. Have at it, it says. Don't be foolish. Don't embarrass ourselves. There has to be some guidelines, you know. But once those guidelines are established, they're there to be pushed and stretched and understood. Me, I don't think imagination means a reckless disregard for the status quo and everything that there is around us. Oh, no. I am far too, I think, old school for that anymore. Hell, I have my likes and dislikes about the, I like some of the music of the past, but the sound systems before were crap. Today it's sublime. I can listen to operas if I'm close my eyes and I'm in the Met, you know, or it's opening night at the Scala. This is just, no. Much more old school, and I think a lot of you are. We are able to challenge ourselves to produce genius within the current constraints. Nothing is going to change around us. The world is what it is. What we can change is ourselves. We can be optimistic. We can be purposeful. Oh, well, I don't know if I can carve away the David here. I don't think that marble is just quite the right grain. No, I'm not going to paint that ceiling. No, why would I paint a ceiling? You know, for money? Come on. It's too hard. I'll give you lots of money. Well, okay. And then I want you to finish it really fast. Hey, well, if you wanted to finish the ceiling fast, give me a roller. You know, you won't use these bloody brushes. I'll use a roller. Give me the rollers. Get the kids up here with the rollers. We'll finish this weekend. We can't unlock the imagination quite like that. But bloody hell, masonry has done it for centuries. It's a blessing to humanity. And how can you not appreciate him? How can you absolutely not? Here, just a little taste from living the enlightenment. Just a little taste before I kick you out the door. And I hope you'll come back and see me. You can tell I'm a desperate person. I need advice here. I'm a desperate mason. My gosh, there's so much I don't understand. We may find the interiors of these surviving mansions garish. This was not the judgment of contemporaries, you'll pick this up in a second, who identified with the cultural values that they proclaimed. In urging him to identify with the opulence of the court style, the pocket companion told the Freemason that places like Houghton Hall in Norfolk, built by the great Whig oligarch and Prime Minister Sir Robert Walpole, was in itself a sure sign of cultural vitality. The Palladian style, as it appeared in new mansions of the oligarchs, thrilled the Masonic imagination. Well, I know nobody else is going to say it. Let me put words to your thoughts. We could really use an inspiring, Masonically inspiring building. In this country, we could really use it. I'm having a hard time with my friends that are saying, well, you know, the National Trust won't let you rebuild anything in these little communities across Ireland or across Scotland and England without preserving a certain context. Well, and then they're pointing out that here in Canada, I'm saying, well, we're young. You know, we're coming up to our 150th birthday. We're young. Give us a chance. The truth is, we don't have very much worth saving. We have a beautiful environment. We haven't screwed that up quite yet. We've tried, but we haven't quite screwed it up the way that Britain had screwed it up and then realized that. And, you know, they reclaimed the Thames from the sewage, it was, and the stench of the cities. Well, we're still dumping a lot of stuff into the oceans in this country, but our architecture, our buildings are really community. But it wouldn't kill us, would it, to create a monument, a structure that just speaks, that's worth keeping, worth repairing, worth preserving as a statement about our past and our respect and a connection with the generations not born yet that will be great Masons. Come back and join us here on Masonic Effects. Look forward to it. Am I here next week? I'm here next week. Yeah. Son of a gun, we are only 28 days away from the spring equinox. Can you believe that? It's scary to think that you and I will be in balance for that one of those 2 days a year. Here, this will kick us off really well for the rest of the day. Enjoy. Whether you're in Australia tuning into us, or Norway, or the United States, or in Canada, those are the four places where our audience are rooted. Check out a little Bud Powell. He's speaking to all of us here. This is from 79. Thank you.